Now, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky paid a surprise visit to the U.S. Capitol yesterday, meeting earlier in the day with President Joe Biden at the White House and addressing a joint meeting of Congress in the evening.
We have artillery. Yes. Thank you. We have it. Is it enough? Honestly, not really.
Zelensky came directly from a combat zone in Ukraine on Tuesday. During his visit, continued to wear wartime clothing, an army green sweatshirt, cargo pants, and combat boots. We're looking at the timing of his visit, what he hoped to accomplish, and where the war to get Russia out of Ukraine goes from here. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions, what reactions do you have to Zelensky's visit? What do you want to know about U.S. support for Ukraine, past, present, and future? What do you want to see the U.S. do to support Ukraine? Do you think there's been enough? Do you want to see more? What questions do you have about how this all ends? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Lowell Barrington is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University. Lowell, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. It's great to be with you again.
Can you talk about why this visit and why now?
Well, I think it was interesting because there was not a lot of advance warning, as you know. It came together pretty quickly, sort of over the weekend with some planning, and then was really only announced right before Zelensky was in D.C. And I think there are a few things with the timing. I think one was there has been a little bit in Europe, but also a bit in the United States of some kind of rumblings in the political system from different people about maybe we, you know, need to cut back a bit on the aid to Ukraine and we got to focus on ourselves a bit. And as much as he's been very effective in the past with these addresses where he's speaking virtually, you just can't, you know, replace being in person. And I think it was a at times powerful and a very effective speech where he made the case for further aid. And I think made it much more difficult for people who were kind of calling that into question to continue with their positions.
Can you talk about some of his specific asks to the president and to Congress and how they match up with the current situation on the battlefield in Ukraine?
Well, I mean, first of all, I will say we've given a lot of aid to Ukraine. We've given not just military aid. There's been a lot of non-military aid. I think people don't pay enough attention to a lot of humanitarian and financial aid, and Ukraine still needs that. And I think in some of the meetings that were going on with advisors on both sides, I think that was still continued to be talked about. But there's been a real shift over the course of this war about the kinds of weapons Ukraine needs. Initially, we've talked about in the past, the sort of smaller weapons. We've sent over 10,000 total javelins and stingers to Ukraine. Those were really effective early on, but as the summer dragged into the fall, they just were less necessary. We needed Ukraine to have longer range battlefield munitions and things. That's when we started talking about the HIMARS system, which has been talked about in the past. And I think the big change for where we are today is really starting in October. You know, Russia just massively stepped up this launching of rockets and missiles at cities in Ukraine, often targeting the energy grid. I think it took some people a little while to realize, even though a lot of us were saying early on that seems to be the target, you know, kind of took a little bit for some people to realize it was not really going after civilians as much as going after them indirectly by going after the energy grid. So this has led to Ukraine wanting an increased ability to try to intercept those rockets and missiles, and increasingly worried about these Iranian-made drones, which have been very effective as well for Russia.
And President Zelensky made the case that, yes, this is help for Ukraine, but it's bigger than that. Here's a listen.
Your money is not charity. It's an investment in the global security and democracy that we handle in the most responsible way.
Can you talk about that? Something at stake even bigger, and that it's still important, even bigger than the survival of Ukraine and Ukrainian people, that this has consequences for the United States.
Yeah, I thought he's very smart in really not only kind of leading them with that, but continuing to come back to it in the speech. That this was really, he said at one point, this sort of a broader fight, you know, for freedom over tyranny. This isn't just a, as you said, Ukraine-Russia conflict. The other thing about that in terms of some political context is earlier this week, Mitch McConnell said something actually quite similar, which was interesting, where he basically said, you know, there's a kind of moral argument for this, but there's also just a really, you know, nuts and bolts American national security interest reason for doing this as well. And I think that the Zelensky speech sort of went beyond that, but it also built on that idea that this is in our interest too. It's not just something we're doing, as Zelensky said, out of a sense of charity.
We are talking to Lowell Barrington from Marquette University about Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's visit to Washington, D.C. tomorrow, address to both chambers of Congress, and the latest in the Russian invasion of Ukraine. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, what you want to see from U.S. policy there, your questions about what's going on in the war, what it would take to end it. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Lowell, you mentioned the targeting of power plants. Very wintry here in Wisconsin now. The same in Ukraine. Here is President Zelensky talking about the impact of that and Ukrainian resolve.
In 2 days, we will celebrate Christmas. Maybe candlelit. Not because it's more romantic, no, but because there will be no electricity. Millions won't have neither heating nor running water. All of this will be the result of Russian missile and drone attacks on our energy infrastructure. But we do not complain. We do not judge and compare whose life is easier. Your well-being is the product of your national security, the result of your struggle for independence and your many victories. We, Ukrainians, will also go through our war of independence and freedom with dignity and success.
Lowell, he's speaking to Ukrainian resolve there under incredibly difficult conditions. You actually conducted surveys of people in Ukraine just a couple months back. Did what you find matched up with what the president of Ukraine was suggesting there?
Yeah, it did. We actually had a few things that we were kind of expecting, but I think I was still surprised at the strength of the unity of the Ukrainian population in a few ways. And we asked both, you know, sort of closed-ended questions where they had to choose among some responses, but also allowed them to just speak openly and freely in their own words. And those were really powerful things that they said about how, you know, this they see this as a fight for the survival of their nation, for their own identity. And when when a war is ultimately about identity, it allows the side that has been attacked to, you know, be more effective in its mobilization. It is really seen by a lot of Ukrainians as, you know, this is not just about our territorial control. It's about our very lives and the survival of the Ukrainian identity.
We've seen some outsiders from around the world say, okay, if we want peace, it might require some territorial concessions from Ukraine. Crimea, parts of the Donetsk region that had been effectively controlled by Russia in some ways, even before the invasion. You asked specifically about that in surveys. What did Ukrainians say?
We did, and these were some of the most stunning responses. We asked a couple different versions of the same question, sort of asked them with opposite wording. So if you're answering consistently, you know, you would strongly agree with one and strongly disagree with the other. And that's what happened. They were consistent, they were unified, and it was in the range of 90 to 95% of the Ukrainian people basically held this position that there will be no territorial concessions, that the only acceptable outcome is a complete victory that involves Russian withdrawal from all territory of Ukraine, including Crimea, which again is a really, really strong position to take. And what's interesting is in some ways that gives Zelensky a little bit of leverage in his negotiations with Russia. He doesn't have the situation where he can say, my people are open to compromise here. On the other hand, again, it's a limiting thing, right? It constrains what he can do politically within his own country. I think he's been, you know, masterful in his execution of the army offensives and defensive actions that have been taken from a military standpoint, but also just incredibly successful at mobilizing and rallying his people. And I think he's in a way a victim of his own success there, that he has made people believe that Ukraine can win this war. And as a result, they are not going to, you know, easily accept territorial concessions to Russia at this point.
Well, staying on the idea of Ukraine giving up territory, the notion that, okay, if Ukraine gave up Crimea, some of its eastern part to Putin, and then Putin would say, okay, I'm happy now. I have all the land I want for Russia. I mean, that doesn't seem, that seems naive to think that, given the pretext he's given for invading Ukraine could apply to other parts of the former Soviet Union or other parts of the Russian Empire. That that doesn't really sound like a road to lasting peace to me.
I think that's a fair point. I think we think back to the beginning of the war and the way he talked about this and why the initial attack was on Kyiv, which was about removing what Putin called a Nazi government. You know, there was this theme of denazification of Ukraine. And so I don't know if he would be satisfied. I think at this point he would, in the short run, take that as a victory that he could point to with his own people. But he also has his own constraints that again are somewhat of his own doing, which is he has really kind of leaned on and unleashed Russian nationalism. And the Russian nationalists are if anything, you know, quite critical of this war from it not being aggressive enough in how it's been approached so far. And so again, I it would be interesting for him to have to sell, you know, really only getting what they already had after 2014, after all this, right, which would be Crimea and that eastern part of Donetsk and Luhansk. It would seem like he has to offer the Russian people something more than that as well. So both presidents are really in a difficult situation where there's not an overlap in what they can probably effectively pitch to their own people as a win from at least a territorial control standpoint.
We're talking about Ukrainian President Zelensky's surprise visit to Washington, D.C. yesterday and the current state of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Our guest is Marquette University political science professor Lowell Barrington, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you watch that address to Congress last night? What did you think? What do you want to see come out of this? Do you see a path to peace? Do you have questions for our guest about what's going on in U.S. policy there? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Lowell Barrington, associate professor of political science at Marquette University, looking at the state of the war in Ukraine and President Zelensky's visit to Washington yesterday. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your comments, your questions for our guest. Let's bring on a caller now. Charlie is with us in Beaver Dam. Charlie, hi.
I don't know who I heard it from. It was probably on yours or WPR, but I heard that there's rare metal earths in the eastern part of Ukraine, and that is what the main reason for the attack is. They want the land for the rare metal earths. And I also heard that Afghanistan, Russia was there 12 years before we were, and I was told from someone that was stationed over there that they have the largest deposits of lithium left in the world.
Charlie,
in Ukraine.
Thanks. I gotcha. Thanks for the call, Charlie. Lowell, is this in part a resource war on Russia's part?
It is. I mean, I will say I've heard less of that narrow kind of sense of the resources in question, but there is certainly a view of eastern Ukraine as having more of the kind of industrial economic base of Ukraine initially, although again, there's been an awful lot of destruction as a result of the war, so there will have to be a lot of you know, repair and efforts to rebuild Ukraine after the war, regardless of which country is controlling that area. There's also a lot of agricultural production in the eastern part of Ukraine. I think we think of the western part of Ukraine as the more agricultural area, but the what's called the kind of black earth, the really rich soil areas of Ukraine include a lot of the east as well. So I think there were some economic calculations. Ultimately, this war has been in a lot of ways about identity from the start, and that's also on the Russian side. I think on the list of things that Putin does really deeply believe, I think that he believes to some extent that Russians and Ukrainians are one people, as he's said and written about. And I think that he felt like this was an area that Russia really just had a right to historically and today.
Charlie, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Lowell, in a memo you sent out with your survey results from Ukraine, you talk about, you know, some of the conditions for peaceful resolution of conflict. You mentioned an overlap in negotiating positions between the two parties. That doesn't seem to be in place here. One side winning a decisive war militarily and making the other side retreat and give up. That seems like a tall order for either side. What could be a path to a peaceful resolution here?
That's a really good question. I think one thing we do need to also think about is the role of the Western Alliance in all this, and to what extent they remain solid in their support of Ukraine. That while it does mean the war is prolonged, it also means Ukraine doesn't have to as easily think about making concessions because they are getting support. Ultimately, in a lot of ways, I think we can't expect a diplomatic solution anytime soon. I think if Putin were to be removed or were to die in one way or another in office or something like that, maybe the door would be open. But again, as we've talked about in the past, I think that the danger there is we don't know what we're going to get after Putin and Russia either. And it could be someone who's actually even, you know, more of a Russian nationalist than Putin seems to be a lot of the time. So I'm not optimistic. I think Putin's strategy in all this is literally to sort of starve and freeze Ukrainians this winter and force them to negotiate. That is why they're going after the electrical grid and water supplies and things like that with these missile strikes. And I think as much as, you know, we're dealing with a weather situation here that's a real serious thing, and it's in the 30s in Ukraine, it's warmer there than here right now, but you know, they are dealing with not these just kind of regularly scheduled rolling blackouts. They're losing electricity and heating for sometimes days at a time as the winter is about to get worse and worse. So I think that Putin believes that strategy has a chance to work. I don't think that's right. I think as Zelensky has made clear, the Ukrainian resolve is not going to be broken by those kinds of actions.
And staying with the humanitarian impact, you were just talking about, of course, people going out without water, without electricity. We've also seen dire consequences when territory and when people fall into Russian hands there. What do we know about war crimes, atrocities, people throwing around the word genocide?
That's not only being exposed as Ukraine has grabbed more territory back from Russia in the conflict, where they've taken towns and have been able to actually locate and find these mass graves in some of the cities from territory they've reclaimed. But there's also been good work done on using satellite photos and different things around cities that Russians are in control of, and seeing the digging of huge trenches and mass graves, and then, you know, filling them back over. That people have been cataloging as well. I will say I don't want to portray this as a, you know, one side is the only, you know, evil side and the other side's just doing everything perfectly well. I'm sure we will discover that Ukraine at times took actions in the heat of the battle that we would not want to have been them doing as well. But it is, as a whole, it's been a largely one-sided thing in that regard. And I think we're going to continue to find that after the war. This will be a kind of horrific part of history for this part of the world for decades down the road in terms of the slow rollout of what people will find year after year.
Talking to Lowell Barrington from Marquette University with the latest on the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the Ukrainian president's visit to Washington, D.C. yesterday. Lowell, in response to that visit, we've seen statements from spokespeople for the Kremlin, the Putin administration, saying this is a proxy war for the U.S., U.S. being willing to sacrifice Ukrainians, and saying it won't deter Russia from, you know, meeting its goals in Ukraine. What can we tell are the Russian goals in Ukraine at this point in the war?
That's a really, really good question, because, again, I think they've been changing. There is a sense in the short term right now that what Russia is doing is largely giving up on some of the areas in the south. So the area that Ukraine got back around Kherson, I think they are not trying to take, but they are trying to push more through Donetsk and Luhansk than they have control of right now. Actually, Zelensky mentioned in his speech this area of Bakhmut in eastern Ukraine, and that's pretty far northeast into the Donetsk region. So this is an area that Ukraine has held on to. And I think, again, they are really looking for that in terms of Russia as an area to get control of, just from a kind of public relations victory standpoint. I think the other thing that they are trying to do in some ways is to get wins by taking out Ukrainian equipment when they can. And I will say that one of the things that a lot of people are focusing on is this decision to send a Patriot missile battery to Ukraine. And I do think it's, again, it was kind of a PR victory for Zelensky, but it will also be a very high priority target for the Russian military when that is up and running.
Lowell, what are you watching for in the next few weeks?
Well, domestically here, I think one of the things we're looking at is whether what we've seen in the U.S. Senate and in the bulk of the House of Representatives stays in place when the House switches over to Republican control in terms of the attitudes about aid. I will say I've been kind of frustrated with the rhetoric about the, you know, we're not going to have a blank check for Ukraine. I think that's a really false kind of red herring type statement in the first place, that there's never been a blank check. We've always had to argue for and you know, make a case for as the American government to others in the government and to the American people about what we're doing in Ukraine. So I think that, you know, that's one thing, though, that we will have to watch is just to what extent there will be pressure to kind of cut back on support for Ukraine. And then I guess, again, in a not very uplifting way, I mean, I think the biggest thing to watch is just how the Ukrainians do survive and hang in there through this next weeks and months as the weather gets worse and worse and the missile and rocket strikes continue.
Well, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Lowell Barrington, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University, with us to look at the war in Ukraine and break down what we heard from President Volodymyr Zelensky during a surprise visit to Washington, D.C. yesterday.